Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today is our Point book club discussion of David Garnett's novella, Lady Into Fox. Originally published in 1922, it won both the Hawthornden Prize and James Tate Black Prize for fiction. Joining us to help guide our conversation is Margaret McCormick. She's director of the Woods Hole Library. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Mindy.
And also with us is Ellie Costa, reading specialist working with children in New York City and transitioning into an organic farmer and fox enthusiast. Hi, Ellie.
Hi.
So, Margaret, you helped us choose the title for our book club. Tell us why it appealed to you and give us a synopsis of the plot.
Well, first it's a brief story, so I thought that would be appreciated. And anyone that's been in Woods Hole the last couple of years is very aware that we have quite a number of fox families. The children at the preschool get to watch them with their kits in the spring. In fact, on my way here this morning, as I was driving down School Street, who should step out but a young fox with something she was taking home, probably to her family. It's an interesting, odd little story, and I thought it would be particularly appropriate this time of year.
All right, so give us a synopsis of the plot.
It's, like I said, a brief tale. Husband and wife, newlywed. They live in a remote area in the woods. They enjoy nature. One day they go out for a walk, and he turns away to look at something and turns back. And his wife is no longer there, and instead there is a fox. And this is the story of how they come to terms with that. And it's just a fun, fascinating, interesting little story. You can read it all different kinds of ways.
Yeah. Now, Ellie, were you familiar with the book or the author, David Garnett?
Not at all, actually. So when Margaret told me about it, I thought, oh, this sounds like fun. In fact, there's a fox who walks through my yard every day. So it did capture my imagination for that reason.
Now, the main characters, husband and wife, are Sylvia and Richard Tibrick. Mr. Tibrick doesn't spend much time wondering how or why his wife turned into a fox. Instead, he immediately dismisses the household staff and without any regret shoots their pet dogs. He has a singular focus to keep her transformation secret and to keep her safe. His world narrows and he seems to lose sight of anything else. What does this reveal about his character? Margaret, let's start with you.
Oh, could say a lot of things. He's kind of a loner, and he is embarrassed about this this situation, and he doesn't want anyone to know. And he's fearful. So he goes to great lengths, and it's very sad because I think he would have. It would have helped him to have more people around him as this was happening, but he chose to do it alone and keep his privacy. So, he's a quiet bit of a loner.
Yeah, Ellie, what are your thoughts?
I see that, and I also wonder, he's protecting himself, I think, from scrutiny because something has happened in his family that is would possibly be looked askance at by the rest of the community. But I also see him protecting her. I see the devotion of a new husband, and they are newlywed, and something has been revealed here, something he didn't know about her, something he doesn't understand about her. I feel a kind of protectiveness on his side because when he shoots the dogs, he is protecting her from being hunted by them or being injured by them. And I also detect a kind of fascination. I feel like she has revealed something so unexpected, but he's curious. He's interested. He doesn't react negatively to her at all.
If you've read the book and you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Now, Sylvia starts out more human than fox. She still wears clothes. She conducts her morning toilet, as they say, plays cards, eats at the table. But with each day, she becomes more and more like a fox, especially when she's outside. Ellie, how does her demeanor change when she's outside?
Well, it's interesting. I feel I'll start with when she's inside. I think she's still in the trappings of her life as a civilized woman. And he keeps her inside for a long time. But when she gets outside, she has some permission, I think, permission to feel the more natural self, to feel herself more a fox. And so she does begin to do things more and more naturally like a fox, and gradually gives up some of the things she used to, even in the form of a fox, seem to enjoy. For example, she liked to play cards, even as a fox, but once she got outside, she forgot that. She becomes drawn to that natural world. She wants to chase ducks. It feels like an adjustment that is similar to adjustments that we all make when we're thrust into new situations.
Yeah. It's a real, like you said, odd, kind of quirky story, but the way he writes, you really can feel the emotions, both of you know, the husband and of the wife turned fox. And when she gets outside, there's all of a sudden this playfulness and this joy. Margaret, you want to add anything?
I think that's absolutely right. She's, maybe this is her inner spirit coming out. She's running and chasing and rolling, and she becomes more youthful. It's interesting he uses the word, you know, he says to her, "Oh, you're becoming a madcap and a hoyden." And I wasn't quite sure what hoyden was, but now I know that it's a boisterous young girl, not used very often these days, but... She's becoming more a vox, and he's having to deal with that, and that's where the struggle becomes apparent in their having to adjust to one another, and it's fun.
Yeah,
it's sad and fun.
Yeah, and the use of the word vixen, right? It's like,
yes.
I wondered if he chose a fox because he could use that word vixen.
I wonder. Yeah.
So Mr. Tubrick cycles through many of the emotions you would expect: sadness, anger, hope. And we'll hear a short section of the book that gives us a sense of his range of emotions. But Margaret, set up what has happened leading up to this scene where he brings home the rabbit.
So he is finding that she is becoming more fox-like and no longer interested in the things she enjoyed earlier. She's walking on all fours. She wants to go out all the time. And he's very concerned. She doesn't want to listen to him reading to her or listening to him play the piano. So he says, I've got to see where I stand with her and see where she's headed. So he devises a little experiment. He goes outside and picks some snowdrops. And he also goes to the market and he purchases a rabbit, which he brings home in a little wicker basket. So he shows her the flowers, and she's thrilled and goes and smells them and looks at them. And here's what he does to see what's happened, what's going to come next. So he, yes, he goes into the next room to get a vase or to fill the vase with water. And while he's gone...
Yeah. The excerpt is read by Amy Vince, and it begins when Mr. Tebrick comes back into the room and he sees the blood and remaining scraps of the rabbit.
Oh, Sylvia, Sylvia, would you have never done this? Would I have never tempted you in a fatal hour? Does not this butchery and eating of raw meat and rabbit's fur disgust you? Are you a monster in your soul as well as in your body? Have you forgotten what it is to be a woman? Meanwhile, with every word of his, she crawled a step nearer on her belly and at last climbed sorrowfully into his arms. His words then seemed to take effect on her, and her eyes filled with tears, and she wept most penitently in his arms, and her body shook with her sobs as if her heart were breaking. This sorrow of hers gave him the strangest mixture of pain and joy that he had ever known, for his love for her returning with a rush, he could not bear to witness her pain, and yet must take pleasure in it as it fed his hopes of her one day returning to be a woman. So the more anguish of shame his vixen underwent, the greater his hopes rose, till his love and pity for her increasingly equally, he was almost wishing her to be nothing more than a mere fox, than to suffer so much by being half human.
What's interesting here is how he reads her emotions. We say she's acting a little bit Hubert and Fox in the beginning. It isn't that she's speaking. He's interpreting everything through her eyes and her actions, right? And you feel this sort of adaption happening with both of them, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. So what did you think about that scene? We I was a little surprised that she went for the rabbit, but I guess I shouldn't have been.
No, not at all. She's becoming more fox than woman.
It's a real turning point for them, too.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, for some people, this book is a simple read. This is a review left on Goodreads. It says, guy meets girl, girl turns into fox, guy loves fox, fox meets male fox, guy finds fox family, guy depressed, the end. But others find a lot more to the story. Is it about a man's conflict with our animal nature or a woman's growing independence? Is it a view on how relationships, whether change or the meaning of unconditional love? Well, as you're reading it, you have all these questions, right, Margaret? What were your thoughts?
Oh, all of those thoughts. And yet, in the end, it's about love and how love changes, but also what we do in our best wishes to have a relationship. Sometimes we smother and we overprotect and we try to keep safe. And that's sort of ultimately the message for me, if there is one at all.
What about you, Ellie?
I absolutely agree that there are many themes in play here, and see the love and the sacrifices we make when we love. And I also felt this struggling under the constraints of a civilization. I'm keeping in mind that it's written in 1922, coming out of a Victorian era. And I feel that they both are struggling with the constraints that the rules of their civilization are putting on them. His to be responsible and in control of everything, when in fact maybe he's drawn to a wilder, more natural state. And hers as well, in the role as a woman, with many more rules and many more restrictions imposed upon her. So that was another thing on my mind throughout the book.
You're listening to The Point. It's our on-air book club. We're discussing Lady into Fox, a short work of fiction by David Garnett. With us is Margaret McCormick, director of the Woods Hole Library, and Ellie Costa, reading specialist. Listeners, do you think Lady into the Fox is a story of unconditional love, women's independence, human beings finding their place in the natural world, or something else altogether? Share your thoughts with us, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We're going to dive into all of these themes this hour, but for a minute here, I want to talk about the life of the author, David Garnett, because it's a little bit unconventional, especially for the time period. Garnett was a member of the Bloomsbury Group. Margaret, what was the Bloomsbury Group?
This was a group of English writers, intellectuals, philosophers, and artists, and they lived in Bloomsbury, which is quite near London. And without living in a commune, they had a very free life among themselves. And their work, it showed in their work. Some of them you're familiar with, Virginia Woolf, John Maynard Keynes, E.M. Forrester, and at the same time, for all their intellectual power and ability, they're an interesting group, to say the least. There's been so much written, and it makes me want to read more about them. You'll get into the next bit about his second wife, but mm-hmm. we can talk about that later. Anyway, yeah, they're a group. They're very well known and kind of controversial.
Well, and when Garnett wrote Lady into Fox, he was married to Rachel Marshall, who did the woodcut illustrations for the book. Ellie, describe some of the images and what they add to the story.
Yeah, the illustrations were beautiful in that the choice of a woodcut was brought more of the natural world, I felt, to the story. So I felt like he was always juxtaposing the natural and the, you know, the extra civilized. They made the woodcuts evoke the feeling of a folk tale. This feels a bit like a folk tale. And I noticed that in most of them, they chose to really highlight the absurdity, perhaps, between the natural fox, the wild fox, and the trappings of civilization that she had lived with up until that moment when she began to follow her true nature, perhaps her heart. So, for example, there's a wonderful illustration of her husband holding the stereoscope so that she can look through and they can look at pictures of, I've forgotten what the locations were, perhaps Italy, you know, Switzerland, places far away, but so that they could do that together. There's an image early on, right after her transformation, where she's in a dressing gown, but she's a fox. And Ray Marshall really did capture her fox likeness. I mean, she really looks like a fox. Yeah. And she's wearing a dressing gown and lying back on a chair and in anguish. So these woodcuts were very emotional. They really brought out the emotion of the story and the conflict of the two worlds she found herself in.
Yeah, they're great. And one of the things, don't you wish you could, you wonder what the conversations were for the collaboration between the two on what the illustrations would be, right?
Yeah. I also ended up thinking a lot about what their relationship must have been as man and wife, as you say, as part of this Bloomsbury group, and what were they allowed to follow in terms of their own nature, and what were they acknowledging about the state of men and women in the times they lived in?
Well, and also, some accounts, Garnett is bisexual, and he does have a relationship with painter Duncan Grant. And in fact, Lady Into Fox is dedicated to Grant. So the connection between Garnett and Grant even becomes more complicated after this, Ellie Phillison.
Yeah, so Ray Marshall, Garnett's wife, she dies young of breast cancer. They did have two sons, one who went on to become a writer himself, Richard Grant. I'm sorry, Garnett. But later, Duncan Grant, Garnett's lover, he has a daughter with a woman named Vanessa Bell. Vanessa Bell is married to somebody else. She's married to Clive Bell. I'm actually not sure if you say Clive or Cleve, but I'll say Clive for these purposes. So Vanessa Bell is married to Clive Bell, and he accepts that she's had a child with Duncan Grant and will raise it as his own. So right after the birth, there's documentation that Garnett wrote, I have a notion to marry it. Would that be scandalous if I married it when it's 20? So right off, the fact that he would call this daughter, it is disturbing to me. But he did, in fact, he married the daughter of his perhaps former, perhaps ongoing, I don't know, lover, Duncan Grant and Vanessa Bell. He married Angelica when she was in her 20s. And I noticed that one of the names of the kits in the book, later on when his wife has a family of kits, is Angelica.
Right. And that's his favorite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Margaret, anything you want to add to that?
No. The only thing I want to add is that when Angelica became an adult, so she was born and raised in this Bloomsbury group. She ended up writing a book called Deceived with Kindness, in which she is quite critical of the Bloomsbury group and identifies that they were quite neglectful as parents, somewhat arrogant, and despite all their good intentions, really did have a looked down or were disdainful of regular folk. So it's interesting. She's of that, and yet she can step outside and talk about the way it was for her.
Yeah. Another detail is I realized she didn't know that.
Right.
She didn't know that her father I'm sorry, was it? Yeah, that her actual father was a former lover of her husband until much later. She found that out much later.
Yeah. So we are, it's our on-air book club. We're discussing Lady into Fox, short work of fiction by David Garnett. We'd love to hear from you. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So Lady into Fox is published in 1922, a few years after Kafka's Metamorphosis, in which a man turns into an insect. Metamorphosis was dark, but the Lady into Fox is lighter. It's even humorous at times. Margaret, do we know what, if any, influence Kafka's work had on Garnett?
I think they don't know. I don't think Metamorphosis was considered a classic at its arrival on the scene. Certainly at that time, there were other stories of transformation that were, and there always have been, with fables and myths, and but I don't, I mean, I'm sure it had some impact, but I don't think a great deal.
Yeah. So Lady into Fox could move into the realm of fantasy, but it never does. Ellie, how does the author use language and technique to keep it rooted in realism?
I think that it remained rooted because, well, in terms of technique, right off the bat, he says, this is an unbelievable thing that's going to happen. But that happens, and people in religion believe in miracles and unbelievable things all the time. So just suspend your disbelief. So that's a start. And then in terms of how the story is told, it is told by a narrator, but the narrator is always focused on the point of view of Mr. Tebrick, of the husband, who hasn't gone through a transformation, who has only to deal with something that has happened. So everything, every event that's related is very much rooted in the real world. His reaction, to his need to protect her, to how he hides, how he deals with the servants, how he attempts to keep a relationship going. It's all done in a very realistic way, and the language remains realistic throughout.
It's interesting, too, because there's a section there where the author refers to himself in the story by name, right, where there's some town gossip, and I went, wait, David Garnett, I mean, isn't that the it sort of threw me for a little bit of a loop, but he uses his name in the story.
Uh-huh, yeah. I just felt like that was sort of like Alfred Hitchcock showing up in his own movie.
Honestly, cameo.
There was a little vanity there, and he just like inserted himself.
That's funny. There's one person besides Mr. Tebrick who knows what's happened to Sylvia, and that is Mrs. Cork, Sylvia's nanny, who has been living with them. In a story with very few characters, I can't quite figure out why Garnett included her. Do either of you have any thoughts as to why?
I think that Sylvia was, I think her mother died, her father was away, or she was raised by this nanny and her uncle, who was a cleric of some kind. So this nanny was quite strict and proper, and she instilled in Sylvia how to be proper and appreciate the finer things, and it was probably a pretty rigorous upbringing, in that she wasn't allowed to run around and be a child, let's say.
Right.
And so it's interesting, Mr. Tebrick dismisses her and sends her back home, but in the end, they're together. She comes back on the scene. I think the nanny blames him somewhat for Sylvia's predicament, and I'm wondering if it might be the other way around, that maybe the nanny was too tough, or you could read into something like that she she kept her and forced her to be more civilized than she ever needed to be.
Yeah, so you sort of get that with the reaction as Sylvia as the fox. She's not exactly too thrilled to see
no,
the nanny,
not at all.
So it seems. Ellie, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, only that I was thinking about the fact that she is there when immediately after Sylvia transforms into a fox, and she walks into the room to see her, and she doesn't blink. I mean, she immediately recognizes that this is Sylvia, even though she has the form of a fox. And I wondered about Garnett using it as a device to show that whatever this is in Sylvia, this is not the first time that these sorts of cravings or a need to be more natural have ever come up. And indeed, the nanny says, you were always wild at heart. So from the beginning, I felt we knew that this had something to do with history, with her history.
Right.
And then later, I think as Margaret is pointing out, we figure out that she was quite severe. And I think that Mr. Tebrick brings her back because he realizes he can't manage the situation. He needs help. And perhaps that strict upbringing would be the cure, but in fact, it exacerbates the problem.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's fun to note that Sylvia's maiden name was Fox.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's right. And the term vixen can mean a spiteful or quarrelsome woman, yet Sylvia is anything but before or even after the transformation, unless we consider she transformed herself purposely as a means of escape from her marriage. Did either of you consider this as you read the book?
You could, but I didn't think so. If that were the case, she would have been more brutal. She seemed to care for his feelings and make an attempt to help him understand how she was moving, how she was changing. So I mean, you could see that. One could suggest that, certainly.
Yeah.
I chose not to.
Excuse me.
Well, you know, I wondered, one of the things that I sort of surprised me is that whole, you know, she transforms into a fox. He doesn't question how, right? So I went, okay, we're not going to go, obviously not going to go how this happened. But I kept saying, did she? You know, did she leave and you know, like this, the villagers thought he was this sort of madman. Did she leave and he replaced her with the fox, and the fox just, you know, kind of, you know, went in a little bit, was sort of tame, and then became kind of, you know, just, it raises a lot of questions, doesn't it? I don't know.
It does.
Did either of you think that?
Well, I guess maybe I'm literal, but, you know, on the first page when the author says, this is going to be a crazy story, but this is what really happened.
But it really happened. This
thing happened. You got it.
Yeah.
I just did. I said, I'm in.
Yeah.
I accept
it.
Yeah. Right. I agree with Margaret that she never felt mean.
No.
I felt that she might not even have made this choice, except that she had to. Her own nature was being stifled, and she had to, or else what, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Eleanor in West Tisby writes, Lady into Fox serves as a perfect emblem to be probed, even discussed during pandemic 20. Transformation, horror, revulsion, helplessness, creative solutions, on and on. It has it all, even the strange ironies, mystery of relationship and isolation. What a brilliant selection for today as we all reflect on the cataclysmic meaning of these unbelievable months. Thank you. Thank you, Eleanor, for that. If you'd like to add your thoughts or comments on Lady into Fox, 866-999-4626 is our number, or our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Margaret, what character did you sympathize or identify with?
I suppose the fox.
Yeah.
There's a lot to, very appealing about them, the way they move, the way they take care of their children, and I felt for the man. I could feel his pain, but I more identified with the fox, yeah.
What about you, Ellie?
I really had, really both. There were moments when I could identify with his sense of loss, the inevitability of events, his tenderness for her, despite her sort of scandalous, really, in that time, scandalous transformation, but he still felt tenderness for her. The secrets that they held, I felt, and yet I felt the inevitability that she really did have to go. She really did have to go. She really did have to follow through with this and try to be as kind with him as she could. Yeah, it would be really hard for me to choose. I think I do identify with both for different reasons.
Well, I can see that, yeah. Now, in 1918, women over 30 gained the right to vote in the UK. Do you see parallels in the story to the women's right movement of the time, Ellie?
I do. I think about the women's rights movement as being a demand to have some control over, for women to have control over themselves, over their future. And I think that's what, I think that is what Mrs. Tebrick is looking for as well. She is, married and all the decisions are her husband's. She doesn't like to hunt, but he persuades her she must hunt, et cetera, et cetera. So, I think there's a parallel there.
And what about you, Margaret?
I'll say same as Ellie. This is a woman asserting herself and becoming free and, throwing off the fetters of a relationship with a man.
You're listening to The Point. It's our on-air book club. We're discussing Lady Into Fox, a short work of fiction by David Garnett. With us is Margaret McCormick, director of the Woods Hole Library, and Ellie Costa, reading specialist. What did you think of the ending of the book? Curious about the remainder of Richard's life? Join the conversation at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. You can also shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. One of the arguments against women's suffrage was that it would lead to the collapse of marriage and family traditions. Could the story be interpreted as a warning of that concern or making fun of it? Margaret, what do you think?
Not for me.
Not for you?
Not at all. Other messages, sure, but no. I think they've been saying that forever. it still hasn't come to pass.
Yeah. Ellie, do you agree?
I do agree. I think that, in fact, ironically, when she was left to follow her nature, she found a male fox and had a family. Mm-hmm. So she dove into what I would argue is a biological sort of natural state, I guess.
Yeah.
Reproduction. But she dove right into family and. So rather than the book saying that there's a collapse of family and traditions, marriage and family traditions, I feel it's talking about an adjustment in what that is, a realignment, perhaps changing the rules of what that has to be, rather than that there shouldn't be marriage and family.
Sylvia accepts being a fox more quickly than her husband. She doesn't struggle in the same way that he does about her change. And she loves her husband, but follows her heart. Is it as simple as animal instinct, or is her character more complicated? Ellie?
I think that it isn't literally animal instinct. I feel like that's symbolic of a free spirit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Margaret, do you think same thing?
I think the same thing. I don't. Yeah.
Yeah. So some have interpreted the story as what happens when a controlled and rather straight-jacketed masculinity tries to cope with a wilder, untamed femininity. Yet when Sylvia is free of the human world, as you said, she finds a mate, she has a litter of kits, still a conventional role for a female. So, Margaret, what did you think about that?
What did I think about it? I think that she was following her instinct there. Not a lot. She was doing what foxes do. Mm-hmm. And I think that in doing so, the husband was able to see that she did have all of these characteristics that a good woman would have. She had children, her kits, she raised them, she taught them.
Ellie, what did you think about Mr. Tebrick's relationship with the kits?
Oh,
it's like a godfather, yeah.
I found it so interesting, and of course was thinking about, you know, Garnett wanting to have a relationship with the daughter of his lover. I'm still pondering that one, honestly. How does that really play out? But I think that he had a desire. See, I see them both as straitjacketed by their society. Equally straitjacketed. I feel like they're both trying to throw something off in their own way, and that they both have a desire for the kind of relationships and the kind of love and the kind of relationships that happen in a family. And if he loved her and still felt she was somehow his wife and felt tenderness toward her, then it seems natural that he would try to take an interest in that. And it was serving him well to experience that love, to experience that family.
It was also interesting, the change in him as he discovers the kits and starts to have the relationship and spends more time out in nature with them. What happens to him in household, right? It's not as clean. He's not as clean. There's this transformation that's happening with him as he's going through this. Who wants to comment on that?
It's part of his accepting of where his wife is, and you know, maybe he doesn't. He is not being critical of her choice or her becoming a fox and living in the wild. Yeah, so he's emulating that in some way, or he's accepting of it.
Go ahead.
I wondered if it was, I kept thinking about how cleanliness is something that, you know, is, I would say, generally valued in our culture and was back then as well, that the servants cleaned the house. I wondered if the author was playing with what seems to be a breakdown on his part. He has sent the servants away. He can't do that himself. So I wondered if he was playing with, this is evidence of how Tebrick is breaking down and how society is breaking down if we allow some rules to change. And perhaps maybe Garnett didn't really think that was a bad thing, but was aware that that the civilization around the Tebricks would see that as a bad thing.
Yeah. At the start of the book, we see him, you know, he's consumed by keeping Sylvia as human as possible, dressing her, as he says, making her odor, playing games. But at the end of the book, he has accepted her wildness, and he considers himself a godparent to her kits. He does find contentment and fulfillment in the world, and he has struggled so much with that until we get to this point. It's interesting to watch that evolution of his character, don't you think, Ellie?
Yes, very much so. He lets a lot go. You know, he lies in the dirt. He brings them their food. He allows them their nature, and gets great joy. And gets great joy from participating in that. I feel happy for him in those moments.
Yes.
Yeah.
He even thinks about, of course, he's going to take care of their education, and he thinks over which schools would be appropriate and which not, and he really does bond with the family.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting. What schools? You're like, what school are you going to send a fox to, right?
Yeah.
And and even like just the I don't know, meeting acceptance of the father of these kits.
Right.
There's jealousy, but he accepts it.
Yes, he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the book. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Relationships, people change. Those that can grow and change together or accept the changes in their partner will likely last longer. Do you think the story is an example of what happens when a person can't change along with their partner or can't accept the change?
I think he does accept.
Yeah, I do too.
I think he embraces it.
Yeah.
As much as he can.
Right. I mean, there are issues with the relationship, but he does come to, he still loves her. He does accept her. At the same time, his need to protect creates the ultimate issue of how she behaves in the wild in situations. I don't want to give away the ending.
Mm. And he can't become a fox.
Right.
He goes as far. I felt he went as far as he could. He really broke with society by isolating himself. He broke with his own connections with society.
Yeah,
he did as much as he could.
Right. You talk about him having a bit of a breakdown, and we haven't really considered if Mr. Tibrick is delusional. The servants and townspeople believe him to be. So what are your thoughts on that aspect of the story, Margaret?
I accept that this is the way gossip goes. one thing is said in the community, and it becomes embroidered to explain the situation, and it's pretty straightforward. Happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so what did you think about the ending of the book? Were you surprised, unsatisfied, satisfied? Ellie, we'll start with you.
I was not surprised. I thought they set up the fox and the hounds and the hunt from the beginning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do believe in well-crafted stories that there's nothing thrown in there as an extra. So it had to mean something. I felt this conflict between society and the values and the rules and what these people were doing. I thought, well, people who don't follow rules, they end up sometimes crushed by society, right? It depends on whether they can avoid that or not. So I felt it was inevitable she would die, and that it would be the hounds. But what I thought was really poetic and a surprise was that it happened in his arms and on his property and in his act of trying to protect her, it was the ultimate sacrifice in a way on his part to protect her at any cost to him. So I thought that was beautiful, really beautiful. Yep.
What did you think, Margaret?
I agree with that. I think that, let's see, how would I put this? I mean, I wonder if his love and his need to protect her ended up smothering or costing her freedom. If he hadn't kept the gates, he had this set up so that she could escape, and yet she ended up being locked in this courtyard, and her only escape may have been his arms. And, of course, they weren't going to protect her from the hounds. So to me, it's a story of you kind of have to you continue to love and you let people go and you have a relationship with them, but it's not one you can control. It has to be both ways.
Ellie, you talked about them setting up the hunt early on in the story, and it's funny because I noticed that, but I thought more of it as that's why she sympathized with the fox. So I thought that her sympathy for the fox was the reason she chose the animal of a fox.
Oh.
I never in my mind she would by the end turn back to human. I wondered, did either of you think that she might return to a human in as the end of the story?
No.
No. Oh.
No.
Yeah.
I gave that up a while in. She had many opportunities if she was going to, and no, she'd gone completely, almost completely wild.
Yeah. I guess I didn't think it was her choice. I thought there was some other powers at work here.
like Pat, a magic spell.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. He did say it was. Yeah, go ahead.
I there was a moment when I wondered about Mrs. Cork when she said Sylvia, when she saw the fox and said Sylvia and knew her right away. I thought, oh, is she a witch? Is she magic?
Pat in Falmouth writes us a note. She says, excellent choice of book, and the discussion is just terrific. Love this book as a teenager long ago. Today's talk by Mindy and the other two guests is opening up fascinating aspects and ideas around this story that I never considered then. And even though I've done a lot of reading on the lives of the Bloomberries, I never realized some of the more bizarre twists in the lives of the author and cohorts. So, and somebody said, spoiler alert. Yes, Catherine, we're sorry. We hope that people would read the book before we had today's discussion so we could talk about all aspects of the book. So, yes, I'm sorry. But it's worth reading even though you know that. Yeah. Were you curious about the remainder of Richard's life and how this experience would impact him?
Yes. Definitely. I think his life was kind of crushed. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that he had much life going afterwards. It would be interesting to see.
Although, doesn't Garnett say he went on to live for a very long time?
Right, he did.
Still living?
I wonder, though, what he had in his life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It almost seemed like maybe there would have been a sequel there, right?
Today, there would have been a sequel, yes. Yeah, maybe not in 22.
Yeah. And David Garnett wrote quite a few different, this was not his only book.
Right. It was funny. I talked to my father-in-law yesterday, and I showed him the book, and he looked at it, and he said, oh, I read this book 75 years ago and, loved it, and then went on to read more about the Bloomsbury Group and other books by David Garnett. And then he said, he's reaching back in his memory here, and he said, if I'm not mistaken, David Garnett was known as Bunny.
That's right.
Yeah, so that was kind of cute that Bunny and Fox and,
Yeah. We should mention that if you're interested in reading it, there is a free PDF download that you can get the book, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we just have about a minute left. Any other thoughts, Ellie, that you want to add?
Well, actually, I didn't know Garnett was called Bunny. You stunned me. I'm sitting here thinking, oh, my goodness.
I know.
What is the significance of having her eat the rabbit? I'll spend the rest of the day on this.
Yeah, clearly an interesting man, for sure.
For sure. Yeah, I just want to say that we have many print copies of this available at the Woods Hole Library. And you can read it, as Mindy said, online through your devices. Please request the book. Delivery is up and running, and if you need a print copy, we have one for you.
Great. All right. Margaret McCormick, director of the Woods Hole Library, and Ellie Costa, reading specialist. Thank you both for sharing your thoughts on the book. And Margaret, thanks for suggesting it. It was a great book for this month's choice. Appreciate that.
Thanks a lot, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.